won't do much for you if everyone around you lacks it. In Philippians chapter 2, verses 1 through 2, NASB, Scripture reads, "If there is any consolation of love, if there is any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and compassion, make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose." Achieving joy and fulfillment means surrounding yourself with like-minded people. Ultimately, having such people in your life becomes very important to helping you reach your goals. It's tough to live according to your faith. To be celibate and desire to live a strong Christian life, for example, when everyone else in your immediate social circle isn't committed to doing the same. Those friends won't just tempt you to fall off the delayed gratification wagon. They'll also take up room in your life that God might be reserving for people more like you. A key benefit of the weight is that it attracts those people. People who share your ability to find pleasure in patience. Like it or not, you are who you hang with. And that's especially true when you're defying cultural norms. When you decide that you're going to be the one person in your circle who doesn't chase sex like dogs chase cars, you'll be pressured to conform. Most people are acutely aware of their harmful behavior patterns and dependence on instant gratification. However, to make themselves feel better, they'll try to get you to do the same. It's easier to resist that pressure when you're not doing it alone. Our marriage is proof that God can and will bring like-minded people together. Neither of us had a clue that the other was going through a preparation process that would ultimately lead us to each other. But that didn't matter. We both chose to opt out of the pursuit of dating traps that had failed us in the past in favor of the pursuit of wholeness. And when it was time and we were ready, God brought us together. Like attracts like. It's a law of human nature. Practicing the wait can be lonely in our "God grant me patience and I want it now" society. If you stay constant in your determination to do things the right way, you'll be surprised by how God will bring the right, healthy people into your life. They'll flock to you for leadership, camaraderie, love, and support. The right group of friends helps you grow individually and collectively. And who knows? One of the people you attract might be just the person you were meant to be with. Other key reasons why waiting is worth it. Waiting reduces your risks. As mentioned before, premarital sex can lead to some nasty outcomes, from sexually transmitted infections to babies you're not ready for. Obviously, if you abstain from sexual activity, you reduce that risk to approximately zero. Waiting reveals who your friends are. People are going to go all OMG when you spill that you're giving up sex for a while. But your real friends, the ones who want the best for you, will get behind the wait and support you through it. The people who aren't true friends will ridicule you at best and try to sabotage you at worst. Great. Now you know who to put on hold from your life. Waiting reveals your triggers. Triggers are people, circumstances, or situations that weaken your ability to maintain your commitment to practicing the wait. They whisper things like, "Hurry, all your best friends are married. What's wrong with you?" Practicing the wait gives you an opportunity to see your triggers, which will empower you to not give in to them. Waiting helps you think clearly. Sex clouds judgment and gives rise to self-delusions. One of the big reasons our relationship is so strong today is that when we were dating, we couldn't fall back on sex when talking got tough. When you're seeking God and you're focused on whatever you're supposed to be doing, you see yourself and the other person clearly. Our intimacy was about conversation, connection, friendship, and falling in love with each other, without it having to be about sex. Waiting honors God's timing and methods. The way God brings you a person can be as important as the person. It's important to have clarity of thought so you can see how God does what he does. God's hand bringing people into your life under the right circumstances at the right time helps strengthen your relationship with each other and the Lord. Imagine if God brought someone into your life at a time when you weren't ready or couldn't appreciate that person. You might never get together with the one who was meant for you because you weren't ready to give them a chance. Waiting helps you choose people because you like them and feel a connection with them. You won't waste time with someone with whom you have nothing in common just because you want to get him or her into bed. Without sex as a go-to, you'll walk right past those people and choose to spend time with people whose character, intelligence, wit, and love for God you find irresistible. Waiting reduces drama, conflict, and expense. How much cash do we burn to look sexy for people who don't even care? How much mental energy do we spend to wine and dine someone with the sole purpose of getting them into bed, only to discover later that they just wanted to get us in bed? Then there's the post-sex conflict, expectations, and crises. Giving up sex spares you this. Apart from the money, who wouldn't love to say goodbye to the walks of shame, morning after scenes, waiting on the call that doesn't come, and feelings of being used? Waiting gives you better knowledge of your partner. When you're not blinded by lust or the counterfeit intimacy that can come with premarital sex, you can see the person you're dating for who they are. You'll be less likely to rationalize their character flaws, only to find yourself married to a stranger a few years later. That's important. One 2012 survey found that about 6 million Americans had concealed financial accounts from spouses or partners. That's financial infidelity. Wouldn't you want to know if you were considering committing to a person who was capable of that before committing? Waiting leads to better self-esteem. Is your partner with you mostly because the sex rocks their world? That's a problem because sexual heat inevitably cools. If your significant other is with you only because of what happens between the sheets, you'll feel bad about yourself and might do some desperate things to keep him or her interested. Without sex in the picture, you know that your partner is with you for you. Waiting will make your engagement a time of clarity. Celibacy brought the finish line for our courtship into clear focus. With sex on the sidelines, we were able to turn all our attention to the big questions. Did we share the same love of God? Did we want the same things? Were our tastes, interests, goals, and intellects compatible? When we decided that each answer was yes, we got engaged. With sex clouding the issues, getting to a proposal could take years. Waiting will help you choose God's plan A. One of the big benefits of the wait is that it lets you step out of the mad rush of dating and sex and expectations, giving you space and time to discover who you are and who you can become. That allows God to fully bless you with the clarity of your life's purpose. We're not saying that he won't bless you with purpose if you have premarital sex, but we believe there's a deeper level of clarity to be achieved when you don't. Choose the wait and retake control of your future. Instead of feeling resentful and angry about waiting for the love of your life, make the decision to take steps to fulfill the potential that God has placed in you. There's nothing disempowering about becoming God's collaborator and properly matching yourself with the life you deeply desire. Know your triggers. A trigger is anything that flips the panic switch in your brain and drives you to make reckless decisions. Knowing your triggers can help you either avoid them or learn to overcome the impulses that they provoke. These are common triggers that seem to push most of us into bad relationships at one time or another. a friend or family member getting married, hitting an important birthday, turning 30, for example, a bad breakup, the death of someone you know, especially someone close to you in age, a life crisis such as divorce or job loss, a crisis in your faith, such as doubting that God exists or has a plan for you. How many of these have you experienced? Did they trigger hasty or imprudent action that you regretted later? Start writing down the specific events, people, or circumstances that act as triggers for you. The clearer you are about them, the less they'll control you. Chapter 3. First Steps Down the Path to Authentic Love. Civilized people cannot fully satisfy their sexual instinct without love. Bertrand Russell. If you think of your life as a fight movie, then the wait is like the training sequence. It's when the heroes train harder than they ever have before. They use discipline, hard work, and perseverance to prepare them for the fight of their lives. In the movie of your life, think of your training methods as prayer, meditation, working out, eating right, studying, growing, creating, seeking healthy relationships, and healing from negative ones. This is how you'll become the hero you're destined to be. During this period of time, do whatever you need to do to fulfill the great potential that God has placed in you. There's nothing passive about this. Quite the opposite, in fact. We can't think of a better strategy for getting what your heart desires than to become the kind of man or woman whose character attracts terrific people and whose skills and wisdom are the equal of any opportunity. You might feel like you're already making steady progress toward becoming that person, but could use a boost to get to the next level. On the other hand, maybe you're sick of being heartbroken and disappointed when it appears like everything good in your life turns out to be a disappointment. Make the decision. There's no magic to the wait. You just have to make the commitment and stick to it. First, acknowledge the power of your sex drive and that it's okay. You want sex. You want it a lot. You think about it. You fantasize. We all do. It's fine. There's nothing wrong or sinful about that. But what are you compromising to have sex? What is sex costing you? What are you not experiencing in your life that you might find if you stop obeying your sex drive and start obeying the Lord? Once you've answered those questions, there's a still more important one to answer. Can you make doing what's right more important than doing what feels good? We were both able to be celibate independently because we arrived at a mental and spiritual place where following the Word and allowing God to work in our lives was more important than any short-term pleasure. If you're at that point, then you're ready to try it. If not, it's better to admit that you're not ready for the wait. Just know that if you keep living the way you've been living, you'll keep getting the same results. You'll know when you've had enough, and you're ready to try it. Also know that when you tell potential partners about your wait, some will want nothing to do with it. That's a sacrifice you must be willing to make. In the long run, being able to bypass relationships with people who don't want the same things you want out of life is a blessing. It was a blessing that when we started dating, we were both celibate. But that's rare. More likely, you'll meet someone fascinating, and before too much time passes, you'll tell him or her that you're celibate. Be clear about your motives. Your love of God and your desire to be a better person and have a better life. Some will laugh in your face. Some will get angry. It will be obvious when you find a person who shares your values and goals. Another question we hear a lot is, what happens if I'm waiting and I wind up having sex anyway? Well, when you're dieting and you give in to your craving for a large piece of chocolate cake, Do you throw up your hands and say, "Whatever, I'm going to order a hot fudge sundae"? Well, some do. But you shouldn't. You should forgive yourself and get back on the horse. It's the same with sex. You're human. Talk it out with your partner and figure out how to keep the same thing from happening again. Seek wise counsel. When you're beginning the wait, it's a good idea to seek some counseling, either from a relationship or spiritual counselor. Talk with someone who can help you figure out what baggage you're clinging to, where it comes from, and how to let it go. This can happen quickly, but the length of time doesn't really matter. What matters is getting a spring cleaning of your spirit that lets you go into the world clear-eyed and ready to approach dating and relationships in a new, healthy way. Let God be your matchmaker. What we didn't see then, but see clearly now, is that God was guiding us in the direction that He knew was best for us, and what was best for us was to come together when the Lord knew we were ready. God is at the heart of the wait, but His role isn't always clear. Let's talk about it, and we'll try to make it clear. In trying to force the action in your life, you can easily overlook the fact that you're not the matchmaker of your life. God is. God has a way of matching us with the opportunities that align with His divine plan. While the items on your to-do list, get the great job, find the perfect apartment, get those six-pack abs, are important, they aren't to be done as if God doesn't have a plan for your life, including your love life. God already has the right life and relationship in mind for you. It may not be with the type of person you have in mind, and it may not be under the circumstances that you think are most desirable. But God knows how to make the perfect match if we allow Him to match us. The catch to this matchmaking is free will. We can ignore God's intentions for our lives if we want to. Many people do. He's not going to force us to choose to live according to His will. It has to be our choice, because coerced change isn't change at all. It's punishment. However, God will put signs and symbols in our path, people, events, opportunities, that can show us the path in life that leads to joy and fulfillment. Then it's up to us to decide if we want to humble ourselves and submit to His plan, even if it seems to lead us away from what we want most. If you fail to choose God's will for your life, even multiple times, you know what? There's nothing wrong with you. You might make some bad choices, have issues to work out, or be desperate to update your social media status to "in a relationship." But that just means you're human. We're all human. All the relationship fails, bouts of loneliness and romantic twists that seem like they're straight out of a romance novel. God can use all of this to help match you with the right person and the life He's always wanted you to have. What if the other person is waiting first? It's wise to prepare for people's reactions when you tell them that you're celibate. But what happens when the person you're on a second date with tells you that they're celibate? If you came to the wait because someone you like asked you to forgo sex, does it mean as much as it does when it's your idea? Of course it does. You're still making a choice to wait. You're not choosing celibacy with some ill-defined personal goal in mind. You're choosing it because you are saying to yourself, "I like this person, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to be with them." When someone else shares their celibacy commitment with you, be as open and respectful as you would like them to be with you. Ask lots of questions, share your faith, and if it seems like you two might be a good fit, suggest that you explore celibacy together. Any path into the wait is a good one if it brings you to the destiny God has in mind for you. Give up the illusion of the one. When we start talking about God and God's will, some people leap to the idea of the One, and that can be problematic. It's a deeply romantic notion that there's one perfect person, a soulmate, for you somewhere in the world, and you're drawing inexorably closer to each other. The truth, however, is more complicated. Let's be honest. Most of us aren't interested in being patient. What we really want is to find the One right now. If we happen to be patient, it's begrudgingly because there are no other available options. So we're patient by default. Meanwhile, we work hard to assemble the elements of a great life that leaves nothing to chance. Move to a city that's good for singles? Check. Work out and get fit? Check. Make sure what we wear, drive, and eat all make us look like a great catch? Triple check. As far as we're concerned, we're going to climb the mountain, get the promotion, and make a lot of money. Then, like a film where the director just shouted, "Action!" our perfect life partner will walk through the door at a party. Of course, you should make yourself as desirable as possible and put yourself in the position to meet quality single people. That's just common sense. But problems begin when you believe that you can order a life partner the way you order a pizza. Yes, I'd like a man who loves the Lord, 6'2", brown eyes, with a BMW and a six-pack, please. Or, I'd like a bad girl shaped like an hourglass, intelligent, with her own money and great feet. There's nothing wrong with being specific. The Bible does say, "Ask, and ye shall receive." John chapter 16, verse 24, KJV. However, the danger comes when we think that if God doesn't bring us a mate who's exactly to our specifications, he's not answering our prayers. What if God is trying to answer your prayers by bringing someone into your life who will fulfill every need, but it just so happens that he or she is very different from your physical ideal? If you're only looking for the ideal, you can miss out. Of course, finding the right one, or being found by the right one, usually isn't that easy. When you don't meet that person you think is perfect by your self-imposed deadline, it's easy to surrender to panic, discard God's plan, and engage in desperate, reckless behavior in order to make love happen in your life at any cost. This compounds the problem, because everything you see, hear, and read seems to imply that while you're enduring agonizing breakups and awkward first dates, everyone else is finding their happily ever after. "You're falling behind," screams your inner narrator. "Where is God?" screams your inner matchmaker. Stressed, envious, and filled with the sense that time is running out, you're desperate to do something, anything, to quell that anxiety. And you're back to the quick fix. Date someone you barely know, jump into a stranger's bed, do something foolish and irreversible like rushing into a marriage without God's blessing on it. Inevitably, things fall apart, and you're on the side of the road, wounded, surveying the wreckage and wondering what happened. Let's be clear. Practicing the wait doesn't mean that you will end up with the one. This is not some genie-in-the-bottle practice that will make your perfect person magically appear. First of all, in God's perfect plan, there is one person who is right for each of us who has been called to marriage. An important distinction, because there are some who haven't been called to it. If both people choose to follow God's will, they will find each other. But some don't. Some people veer off and put their will before the Lord's. Does that mean you're meant to be single for the rest of your life? No, God always has a contingency plan. He's made us compatible with many different types of people. God will provide a way for you to meet someone else who is the right match for the person you are. Someone who will bring you joy, happiness, and peace. As long as you have faith, God will ensure that you will find true happiness with someone who brings out the best in you. The weight and weight. When we started talking about the concept of the weight and the idea of delaying gratification to get what you want, people were most excited about the idea not as it relates to sex, but to weight loss. Nothing, not even sex, stands for instant gratification in our culture more than food. For food, you just have to open the fridge. Delaying gratification to lose weight makes sense. It's a binary situation. Either you eat when you're craving food that isn't good for you, or you don't. But if you can delay that need for a quick fix, you can see results over time. Since, according to experts, weight loss is 80-90% about diet, losing weight really is about controlling what goes in your mouth. Simple principles can really help. Remove temptation. Remove from your house those foods that tempt you the most. Choose someone you trust to hold and keep you accountable. And work on focusing your attention on the body and health you want more than focusing on the food you can't eat. And pray for strength every step of the way. You'll make it. The stages of celibacy. The challenges of celibacy change depending on where you are in your dating life. Before we move on, though, let's repeat something that should be obvious but isn't always. Involuntary celibacy isn't the weight. You haven't been with anyone in a year because you've hit a dating dry spell? Sorry, doesn't count. Remember, the weight is a deliberate choice to delay sexual gratification. If you're stuck in a bad sexual rut, you're probably not thinking about God. You're thinking, how can I get some sex? Before you even consider the weight, get that idea out of your system. The choice of celibacy comes at one of four stages, each with its own challenges. The first is celibacy while you're dating around. Celibacy is probably most valuable at this stage in your romantic life, because you're clear-headed. You're meeting different people, maybe venturing across racial lines, and you need to keep your wits about you. If you're free of sex, dating is all about getting to know people and yourself. At this stage, celibacy is easier. You're not overly attached to anybody. You're objective. You're shopping, and while you might try on a pair of shoes in the store, you don't necessarily take them home. To keep your celibacy commitment when you're dating around, remind yourself of what you're doing and of your goals. To meet lots of people, let God work in your spirit, and break problematic patterns. The second stage is celibacy when you're dating exclusively. You've met one person you really like, and you're getting to know them. You're spending a lot of time together and the chemistry is strong. Communication is critical. Early on, you need to let this person know that you're celibate and why. If he or she balks, then that's not the person you are meant to be with. Don't be afraid to walk away and see what else God has in store. If he or she is hip to the weight, then it's up to you both to keep each other strong and committed. That means avoiding situations that could tempt you and prey on your weakness. In some ways, this is the most challenging part of celibacy. You really like this person, but you're not sure if you're ready to commit to something more serious yet. It's a gray area that's fraught with hazards. One tip? Find other ways to feel stimulated when you're together. Find places to have in-depth conversations about things you're curious about. Attend concerts of artists or styles of music you've never experienced before. Set the same fitness goals and work out together. Take a class. Do things that get you excited about each other's mind, creativity, or depth. You'll come away from an evening together feeling fulfilled, knowing that you've stuck to your commitment. The third stage is, as you might expect, being celibate in a committed relationship. You've decided that yes, this person is worth committing to, and you're ready to be exclusive. This is hopefully the downhill stretch. You can see the finish line, marriage, from where you're standing. That's what helped us be strong during our courtship, because we got to know each other so well, and were completely open about our needs and concerns. Marriage wasn't some vague, maybe someday promise. It was going to happen. We had a time frame. That helped us wait for sex. There are challenges at this stage, of course. You're spending more time together than ever, and talking about a life with each other. Sometimes you might find yourself thinking, "It's so close, why not just give in? We'll probably get married anyway. In my spirit, you're already my spouse." When you're trying to keep your commitment to God at this time, the gift of foresight is incredibly useful. Foresight is the ability to look into the future and imagine the possible and likely outcomes to the choices that you make. We're the only beings to whom God has given this gift, and it's a priceless one. It gives us the power to avoid mistakes by being honest with ourselves about what might happen if we make choice A versus choice B. The fourth and final stage comes when you're already in a committed relationship and having sex. Here, you might want to stop and practice the wait. Spiritually, this might be because you feel convicted that this is what God wants from you. Practically, you might want to gain more clarity of mind and purpose to see if this person is truly your spouse. No matter the reason, this is probably the hardest of all the stages to practice the wait, because you're already in an established pattern of sexual behavior in your relationship. Having the desire to change this requires courage and conviction. When you're in the wait as part of a committed relationship, you're with the person you think God intends you to be with. You can see your potential future laid out in front of you. How will your choices impact that future? If you don't delude yourself and use past relationship decisions as a guide, you can make choices that are more likely to bring you into the fullness of God's best destiny for you. For example, let's say that your pattern is to get into a committed relationship with someone and immediately let sexual desire overwhelm your restraint. This lets you bury obvious problems and pretend that things are fine. However, those problems eventually burst out of the ground like flower bulbs in spring and wreck everything. Except that this time, you employ your foresight. You say, "If I let myself go down the same road, I could squander what God's bringing me. So I'm going to keep a level head, be clear, and get to know my partner in every other way." We could see that our relationship had the potential to be incredible, the greatest experience of our lives. That knowledge, and the fear of losing what we could have if we weakened, kept us committed and helped us avoid past traps. You can do the same. Know that it gets easier. One thing we will tell you: living without sex does get easier, especially when you're not in a committed, serious relationship. Initially, it's rough. You're not giving your body what it wants, and like a chocolate lover craving some 70% cacao, you're thinking about it all the time. Then some time passes, and it gets better. Your mind gains control. Sex can become a pleasurable addiction, and like any addiction, it takes time to break free. It will happen. In Gary Keller's book, The One Thing, he says that it takes 66 days to create a new habit. We love applying that idea to the wait. 66 days of no sex will put you on the path you need to achieve what you want and what God wants for you. You'll love the clarity, the power, and the feeling of being in control. Wise waiting. Celibacy is all about keeping a cool, clear head while you're getting to know someone, and to that end, we suggest that if you drink, go easy on the alcohol during those early dates. We live in a hookup culture, and alcohol is the social lubricant that we use to have fun. But all too often, two people have a few too many drinks and wind up in bed together. That's a great way to find yourself linked to someone you don't even know, and an even better way to end up with a disease or a child. Monitoring and limiting your drinking, especially during early dates when you're just learning about the person, keeps your head clear and perceptions sharp. It also allows you to present yourself honestly. If you become reckless or the life of the party after a few drinks, you might impair your judgment, something you need if you hope to date successfully. Chapter 4. Lead me not into temptation. I can find it myself. Obedience brings peace in decision-making. If we have firmly made up our minds to follow the commandments, we will not have to re-decide which path to take when temptation comes our way. James E. Faust. So, you've embraced the idea of the wait. You've seen the light. Getting your head clear and getting your life in order so God can bless you means, first, giving up sex. Good for you. It's a proud move, taking back your power. Too bad you're miserable, right? Maybe that's overstating it. But you're thinking about sex a lot, aren't you? Most of your friends are still having it and talking about it. You're trying to be strong, but your body is craving sexual satisfaction. You're used to pursuing sex when you want it, so curtailing the drive to call that friend with benefits or a hookup with an ex is tough. You know this is the right thing for you, for your life, but man, temptation is everywhere, and staying strong is brutal. Believe it, we feel you. We fought the natural desire for more than a year from the time we started dating to the time we married. Some days were better than others, but staying celibate was never easy. We were in love, and we were attracted to each other. Very, very attracted. Sometimes the sexual chemistry was so hot that we simply couldn't be in the same room together and keep our commitment to celibacy. That's okay. Sometimes wisdom means knowing when you're not strong, so that you don't have to be strong. It means seeing that a situation has the potential to pack some serious sexual tension and changing your plans. It means not testing your willpower when you know it's not at its strongest. It means knowing that when you wear that dress and he wears that suit, you can't keep your hands off each other, so you wear something else. We did all that. But we definitely had moments when it would have been so simple to play the just this once game and surrender to what we were feeling. But we didn't. We wanted to remain in control. We wanted to see if we could do what others deemed impossible. We wanted to see if there really was something to be gained by waiting. We're living married proof that you can resist temptation and remain celibate even when you're in a committed marriage-minded relationship with someone you're madly in love with. You can do the same, but not if you don't plan and prepare. You have to accept that temptation is coming for you. Not only that, but unless you live in a monastery, temptation is going to be hanging out pretty much 24/7. You've got to have strategies for dealing with it, for bolstering your will when you're weak, for avoiding the triggers that set off your desire, and for getting the heck out of the room when resistance is futile. How will you handle it when dates offer to take you out somewhere that you know might weaken your commitment? What will you do when you're close with someone who's clearly ready to get it on with you? How can you change your physical environment to manage things that will get you thinking, fantasizing, and obsessing about sex? Like a boy or girl scout, you've got to be prepared. The wait isn't for people who think their willpower is so strong they don't need to think and plan. Nobody's willpower is bulletproof. If you've already had sex and are used to getting it, going without it will feel unnatural at first. You can't wing this. If you're going to make a promise to yourself and God, do everything in your power to keep it. That means preparing to deal with and repel temptation, confident that God is going to hold up his end of the deal. No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, NIV. Remembering why you started. If your faith is strong, the hunger to be better and do more can be reason enough to keep you committed to celibacy. It's simply not worth it to fail. The possibility that we might miss out on what God had in store for us was a big part of what kept us on track. When you find yourself motivated by a strong desire to grow into God's purpose, reminding yourself of that goal can help you remain committed. Here's a prayer that will help you overcome temptation. The Lust Prayer. God, please help me get control over this beast called lust. I will not let it destroy me or disrupt the destiny you have set for my life. You said you would provide a way of escape when temptation appears. So show me the exit sign right now, Lord, because I'm about to do something that will please my flesh but harm my spirit. I'm tired of continuously falling prey to lust. I keep falling, getting back up, and falling again. Give me the victory today. I claim authority over my body, my heart, my mind, and my sexuality. You made me sexual, but give me the tools to manage this sexuality in a way that pleases you. You said you'd never leave nor forsake me, so I'm trusting in you, Lord. You have authority over this lust, and I claim that authority now. Be my strength when I am weak, and deliver me from this flesh that threatens to destroy every good thing you've planned for my life. I pray this prayer in the mighty name of Jesus. Amen. The Weight and Creativity. We live in a city and work in an industry where everyone is either trying to act, write, or produce a screenplay, become a director, or do something else creative, so we know what frustrated creativity looks like. Everyone has a creative spark. It's part of our legacy from God, the Creator. We're all creators in one way or another. But for those of us dying to find that creative spark and create something great, a script, a play, a poem, a painting, a monologue, finding our creative voice can be torture. The trouble is that we want to create now. Nothing suppresses inspiration like having to be creative on demand. The creative mind isn't Netflix. You can't press a button and order an idea for a movie or a great melody for a song. You have to wait. The core principles of The Wait apply beautifully to creative people. Quieting the mind, listening to the inner voice, letting go of trying to make things happen, doing other things to distract from the need to have results now. When you do that, you free your subconscious where genius lives. That's when you can create miracles. What temptation looks like. But how are you likely to be tempted to break your celibacy pledge? Some scenarios seem obvious. The second date makeout session that becomes a little too hot and heavy. The beautiful person you just met, who invites you to come in after you've had one drink too many. But honestly, how often does that sort of thing really happen? Genuine temptation, we found, is more insidious. It doesn't seem like you're in trouble until you're more than halfway there. That's when you have to be careful. For example, what if you're dating someone, and he or she dresses for an evening out in something incredibly provocative? Now you've got to spend hours being hot and bothered by how sexy your date looks. You might even start thinking about how good he or she would look out of those clothes. That's a danger zone. Another one is when you or someone in your circle is in emotional turmoil and just needs someone to be with. You know how it goes. A fight or breakup, tears, a call asking, "Could you come over for a while?" Now, if you and this other person have no physical attraction to each other, you're probably safe. But if you do, whether you're the crying caller or the one riding to the rescue with ice cream and tissues, watch out. Vulnerable, lonely people just want someone to hold them, until that holding turns into something else. See where we're coming from? Sexual temptation sneaks up on you and catches you when you're weak, which, let's face it, is pretty much whenever you're breathing and awake. Temptation will fit anywhere in your life that you make room for it. Work flirtations, having contact with exes, pornography, you name it. In practicing the wait, one of your goals is to create a lifestyle that acknowledges temptation by putting as many safeguards as possible in place. That's a lot easier when you can custom fit your anti-temptation plan to your circumstances and triggers. For example, the desire for sex when you're off the dating scene is very different from when you're in a serious relationship. When you're alone and not dating, opportunities to act on your temptation may not be readily accessible. Maybe you have an office crush or an eye on somebody hot at the gym, but that's about it. Staying strong is really about avoiding stimuli that gets you focusing on sex, staying out of provocative situations, and remembering your commitment to God and while you're waiting. But the serious relationship takes the temptations of dating and ratchets them up. Now you're seeing one person whom you really, really like. You're thinking this could be the person you marry. You're compatible in every way, especially physically. You're spending a lot of private time together. This is torture, right? No. Remember, the two of us did this, and it did feel like torture at times, despite our deep faith and commitment. Besides, even when waiting is hard, at least you're not in it alone anymore. And having a committed partner who will help you do it is a real blessing. Taking care of business. We're adults, so we're not going to pretend that you haven't been thinking. But what about masturbation? Can I do that? There are many different opinions about this. Biblically, this is a gray area. The Bible doesn't mention masturbation at all. Ultimately, you'll have to seek God's will for you, yourself. However, be careful because masturbation can lead to the development of sin-filled fantasies that can cause the very act to become addictive. In the end, this is a personal issue and should be decided based on personal conviction between you and God. Press into God to figure out what His will is for you regarding this, because for some, it's a slippery slope that could become more destructive than helpful. Temptation avoidance tips. Now we get down to it. What tricks did we use to stay strong and remain celibate, even when our bodies were screaming for sexual release? The most powerful tool for staying disciplined and keeping your commitment is your faith in and love of God. If you keep in mind that you're doing this as an act of obedience and to receive the fullness of what God has in store for you, you'll have an easier time avoiding sexual temptation. It's just as important that you take responsibility for yourself. Some people say, "Well, things just happen." That's a cop-out. We let things happen if we're okay with them, even if we won't admit it to ourselves.
Megan. When I was 19, I struggled with celibacy. But what I really did was abdicate responsibility for my celibacy. I would say, this man could be my husband, so that would make it okay. Or, well, I'm not going to initiate sex, so if it happens, it's not because I made it happen. But I knew that I was putting the responsibility on the other person and not taking ownership of my commitment. It was hypocritical. Finally, I said, this is not what the Lord has for me. I'm not going to go into another relationship trying to be celibate and then passively caving on the commitment. I had to make the commitment that sex was absolutely off the table. The crazy thing is that when I did that, God blessed me with somebody who was celibate before I was. It's incredible how things can work out when we're true to God and to ourselves.
Mind your triggers. Even if your faith has weak moments, which we all have, the most effective way to be successful in your commitment to celibacy is to know your triggers. Avoid setting yourself up for failure. It's not the act of sex that's the problem, but the moments leading up to it. Willpower is wonderful, but at the risk of overdoing the diet metaphor, you don't keep ice cream and chocolate chip cookies in the house when you're trying to drop 50 pounds. The Lord's Prayer says, "Lead us not into temptation." Matthew chapter 6 verse 13 KJV, meaning, don't even go there. Subconsciously, you might put yourself in an environment where sex is a real possibility, believing that if you break your commitment, you can shrug and say, that wasn't my intention. Stuff happens. No. You can't stand next to the tracks and then pretend you're not trying to catch a train. So don't just rely on loving the Lord and being strong. Know yourself. Not to put too fine a point on it. Know what makes you horny. Take your triggers out of play, period. If going inside your date's house is likely to lead to serious kissing and possibly other things, say goodnight at the door. If staying at someone's house after midnight is dangerous for your willpower, agree in advance that everybody will part ways at 11:30. If kissing leads down the slippery slope, stop at a hug. If you're dating someone steadily and you've both agreed to wait, discuss how you're feeling in real time before you go out. How's your willpower? Is what one of you is wearing pushing the wrong buttons? Is that movie you're planning to see a little too hot? Check in with each other and talk. Your spirit should be telling your body what to do, not the other way around. That's why you have to keep each other strong.